Good morning. Welcome back to Corinth in the Car. I'm Josh. There it is. My voice is a little bit different. I was just getting ready to tell you. Fighting some spring allergies today, but I'm here. And Luke and Adam are here as always. Welcome to Corinth in your Car. Glad you're back with us. Or if you're kind of jumping in maybe for the first time, welcome. We're glad you are with us. And we're going to have some fun today. We're going to do some check-ins, recap a sermon from Sunday, and then end a game with a game today. So I'm looking forward to that. But let's just do the check-in. And instead of just the regular, hey, how was your week in general? Let's just ask this. What's something specific you were grateful for? And then what's something you're looking forward to in the next few days?
Gosh, let's see. Grateful for. Do you got anything off the top of your head?
Yeah, I think just looking back on Easter weekend was a fun weekend.
That was last week, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
It's a busy full time.
I think looking back on that, just time with Tristan, time with family, time to get outside and do a little bit of stuff, and yeah, it was a good weekend.
Did you go to a Braves game?
Yeah, I did that too.
I thought I saw a picture of that. Tell us.
Yeah, that was fun. Grateful for that.
Grateful for a wife that's willing to drive like 3 hours to get to a game.
Whose idea was it?
It was my idea.
Okay.
So it was kind of
$7 tickets. You got
like a little surprise. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it was Tristan's schedule got changed up a little bit at the hospital down in Macon. And so she is working this Saturday, which means she had a couple of days off like during the week.
Oh, was she here last night?
She was here Tuesday and Wednesday night. And so
Puppy Palooza.
We ended up grabbing some cheap tickets to the Braves game, got to surprise her with that. And then, she was here for youth group last night for the first time in a while.
I thought when I was pulling in last night, I thought I looked over and saw Hutch.
Yeah. So
and I was like,
so Adam said, Puppy Palooza.
Yeah.
Yeah. We did.
So you had all your people bring in dogs.
We had some volunteers bring in some dogs just for the teenagers to have some fun with. And it was good. Yeah. It was good for the people who like dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what is your go to finding cheap Braves tickets website?
SeatGeek.
SeatGeek, okay.
Yeah, SeatGeek usually does pretty well. Not Ticketmaster.
No.
Ticketmaster's the highest paid, but SeatGeek is the way to go.
Cool.
Yeah. Yep. Adam, what's something, you know, we always say do the grateful for, not necessarily for, but what's something you're grateful for?
Yeah, no, so it's Thursday today, so last night I had an elders meeting, just always just grateful for any time I get to spend with those guys, just great guys, and guys who love the church and love what the Lord is doing here. And so it's just always encouraging to walk out of that. So I'd say that was a good deal right there. So just looking forward to looking ahead to the weekend. Hopefully weather will cooperate with us as people come to eat barbecue.
That's right. I'm looking forward to that.
That is something to put on the calendar and circle. I'm excited about that.
Looking back, I'm grateful Rosalie was baptized Sunday, and that was a joy for our family to participate in that together. Just a happy Easter Sunday. I was not happy that Freddy's after church, that's like one of the only places that was open, and she wanted to go out to eat. So we said, yes, let's celebrate it. Anyway, it was good, but man, $64, y'all, for like just our family. Crazy.
Yep.
It is crazy. It's the world we live in now. So,
yep. You had them.
yep. I said yes. And all that stuff. I'm looking forward to, let's see, Saturday right now, there's no rain in the forecast. So hopefully.
Praise the Lord.
I mean, Dominic, poor guy. We've signed him up for soccer. And I kid you not, 3 weeks in a row, they've been canceled because of rain, or the rain was so much the day before. The fields were so wet, they didn't want to tear them up. And anyway,
I am right there with Dominic because I have not been able to play in my disc golf league for 3 weeks as well. And so I'm itching to get out there on Saturday morning.
Man, oh, man.
Yep. It's really just a bummer. I hate when things get canceled so much. I did a communion meditation on it a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, it's always, you know, there's always good things in the week. If we look for it, we can certainly find those. And I'm grateful to kind of do a check-in, see how you guys are doing. Adam, you started the sermon with a little bit of fun, talking about things we can't avoid, like death and taxes. So that they're always going to...
Do you know who said that?
No, who said that?
Do you know who said that?
Nope.
Do you got any guesses?
George Washington Carver.
I remember
George Washington Carver.
I think Aristotle and Abraham Lincoln and Benjamin Franklin
Benjamin Franklin is who it's attributed to.
Okay, so many quotes are attributed to him. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's good stuff. Let's just have a little fun. What are some other things maybe that didn't make it into the sermon, but just as it hits you, that question, Luke or Adam hits you right now, what other things can you not avoid? Maybe make it personal, or even before we were podcast, we're talking about Walton County things you can't avoid.
I think you've already mentioned too in the podcast, and it's spring allergies and $64 to Freddy's.
Oh man.
Like, right? Those are things you can't avoid.
Inflation.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Absolutely.
Yeah. Inflation is definitely one of those things you can't avoid.
Yep. I don't know, trees when I'm playing disc golf. Can't avoid those.
Yeah.
It's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
The rain.
The wrong fairway.
So before, a question we've asked before is just like, what's the best sound in the world? And you've said the disc golf chains.
The disc hitting the chains.
So would the worst sound in the world be the disc hitting the tree?
Yeah. It's awful. It's awful, man. It's awful.
Oh, man.
It's terrible. I don't know. I definitely allergies comes to mind. Can't avoid that.
Traffic at 5 o'clock in Walnut Grove or Loganville 78 or
Those
all that,
traffic
all that
lights.
Yeah, just rush hour in Atlanta at any time of the day.
Yeah.
It's funny whenever like people come to visit, they're like, hey, we're wanting to get out of here. When can we leave and miss rush hour? And it's like, you can't. I mean,
3 a.m.
Maybe 3 a.m., but I've driven through Atlanta at 3 a.m. coming back and been stuck in rush hour traffic there too because that's when the construction's going on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you can't avoid.
I was thinking about, you know, four-way stops. I can't avoid getting frustrated at four-way stops because it seems
roundabouts are worse.
Roundabouts.
Oh, no, they are not.
No. In terms of the frustration level.
Frustration when people do them wrong.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I can see that.
Because, like, I got just the other day, like, I was driving in here to the church, and there was, like, a conversion van, work van, and there was a car coming from the, let me see, that would be the west. I was going east, so. Anyway, he treated it like it was a four-way stop.
Yeah.
He just stopped and he waited for the other two cars to like clear the roundabout before he went.
Can't be too careful.
Yeah, it's like that used to be a four-way stop, but it's not anymore.
Have you ever gone the wrong way on a roundabout? On purpose or
never
on accident?
No, I have almost ramped one.
Nice. Ooh. There you go.
Yeah, that was back in Webb City, Missouri, where we were from. So for years, there's this connection that was just always just it was – onto the highway, you just exit off. And so my brain just went straight backwards to, you know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago. And so I'm just plowing straight ahead. And Jennifer, you know, rightfully just kind of started panicking. She's like, are you going to go around the roundabout? And it's like, oh my gosh. And I had to like swerve really hard because it's a huge one.
Yeah.
It's a giant roundabout. And I think I would have got some good air, though.
It would have been fun.
I might have got a new vehicle out of it.
Could have.
So maybe I shouldn't have done it.
And a higher insurance premium.
Yeah.
Another thing you probably can't avoid.
just for a little while.
Hey, so here's something that just popped into my head. I cannot avoid my mother-in-law overreacting sometimes. She'll do the... And it's like not even that like
I would have loved for you to just stop before the gasp.
I just would love
to avoid my mother-in-law overreacting.
It popped into my head when Adam's talking about the four-way stops because this is once again in the Joplin area. This is a decade ago we were there visiting and we had gone to church that morning. She was reading through the bulletin that they gave her that day and right immediately as we pulled out into the intersection a four-way stop. She goes, Dale, my father-in-law, slams on the brakes. We all like hit our heads, you know, on the seats in front of us. And all that happened is that she saw someone's name that looked like the name of someone at their church. They had someone named Sarah Hall, and it wasn't even the same name. She saw Sarah Hill. She's like, oh, wait, that's just Sarah Hill, not Sarah Hall. So funny.
That's hilarious.
So she does that a lot. It's just funny, the gasp. Yeah. So.
Can't avoid things you can't avoid.
Oh,
you can't avoid listening to this podcast without Luke trashing Waffle House.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Waffle House stinks. There you go.
You just can't avoid a bad food take from Luke.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Oh, man. We could go on that.
It's Thanksgiving again.
Mm-hmm. We could go on that all day, probably. The point of that intro was just we cannot avoid difficult people, which is the brand new sermon series we started on Sunday. This was week one. And so Adam, I guess let's do two things. Let's first just give us an idea of the series, why we're doing it, where we're going with it. and then we'll move into just the sermon kind of recap.
Yeah. So the reason we're doing it is because it is unavoidable. We always are going to have difficult people in our life, whether it's critical people, manipulative people, overly needy people, hypocritical people.
And those are the 4 weeks, right?
Those are the 4 weeks.
So yeah. Critical, manipulative, overly needy, and what?
Hypocritical.
Hypocritical. Okay.
And so we're going to encounter people like that, whether it's people that we live next to, that we work with, maybe we actually live with, or if it's just the person we're looking at in the mirror. We're always mm-hmm. going to have difficult people in our lives. And as followers of Christ, you know, it's like, well, how do we navigate that? How do you love your difficult neighbor? If we're to love our neighbor as ourselves, how do you do that?
Yeah.
And so it's just, it's hope. My hope and my prayer is that it'll just be a very helpful series and give us all some tools, to be able to, manage those just difficult relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. So yesterday we started out with the critic, the person who is critical. And, so kind of just recap that message a little bit, because there's some positive criticism that can happen,
mm-hmm.
but where we ended up was the negative criticism and kind of how you deal with that. But yeah, just recap the message. Where were we? What happened?
Yeah. So we were dealing with a critical person. You know, it's like, how do we deal with the critical people, you know, in our lives? If it can be the family member, the coworker, it could be, I mean, it's just easy to be criticized. And so how do we do it? And to start off, we did acknowledge that I think this might be the overly needy one might be, I'm thinking out loud right now. Mm-hmm. This may be the only one of the four that actually has, it's like criticism actually does have some value.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah.
And so that's why I kind of felt like it was important at the front side to say, what we're not talking about somebody who is constructively criticizing, who is coaching, who is building you up.
Mm-hmm.
And so we spent our first part there just saying, hey, there is an avenue whenever criticism can actually change your life for the better.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not really the problem. The problem is dealing with those who are just like constantly criticizing and just they're naysayers. They're always taking shots. And so we used Nehemiah on Sunday. Loved that guy. And an incredible leader. Got a lot of good stuff done. Had a burden placed on his heart by God. And so just looked at how he dealt with the critics that he was dealing with and then kind of just pulled out. You know, his response was to pray whenever mm-hmm. he was dealing with critics. And, in the book of Nehemiah, there's like, it's either 11, 12, or 14, depends on how you kind of count, times that he prayed throughout the entire book. So that's just obviously how he dealt with things.
And that book is like 10, 11, 12 chapters long,
something
maybe 13.
I know it's at least nine.
Yeah. 13.
13.
It's 13. Okay, so yeah. More prayers than chapters, pretty much.
Or as much
prayers as chapters. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, if I remember right, one of those chapters is just him listing out everybody that did everything.
It is, yeah.
So
the best chapter to read.
Yeah, the phone book.
It's your book of baby names.
Yeah.
With Nehemiah.
And so it was like, okay, Sam
Ballot. That's the next baby name.
Exactly. We need to bring it back, man. But
he was the critic, though, so.
He was the critic, yeah. So maybe we shouldn't do that. But if we're going to follow his example and pray, then what we did is we just tried to give you five prayers.
That
you can pray as you're considering the criticism that was leveled at you.
Yeah. So Luke, I'll hop over to you now. Adam kind of told us where we were. As you read through message or just reminded yourself of the story of Nehemiah, what sticks out from his life or from the message that was helpful?
Yeah, I think for me personally, just the reminder up front that we kind of talked about briefly with the, you know, constructive criticism is actually a good thing. I think that I'm a lot better at receiving that now than I used to be. But, you know, mm-hmm. a few years ago in Bible college and high school, like constructive criticism tore me up because I was insecure, mm-hmm. really, really insecure.
That's a huge point, I think, that is worthy to be made.
Right. So like even when someone would critique with my best interest in mind and they would actually be right, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, they're the worst person in the world. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm coming from my own insecurities of, well, you not believing the best about myself or whatever. And so Have had to grow in that a little bit, and so I'm always grateful now for the constructive criticism. And even still, when constructive criticism does come in, have to, and this is where I'm getting to, have to do pray the second prayer quite often is, you know, Lord, with this criticism, help me to figure out, just like, is it good? Is it helpful? Or is it something that is just like needs to be dismissed?
And so second prayer being help me to know when to dismiss invalid criticism.
So, you know, and I think one of the lines you used, Adam, that I love there was just like, in addition to learning to dismiss the unhelpful criticism, was also like not dismissing the person, right? So whether negative or positive, I don't want to dismiss this person, because if I do, it's probably coming from my own insecurities, whether positive or negative in criticism. So I don't know. This is just something I've had to grow in over the last several years. And so I'm grateful for the good criticism and want to be, patient with the negative and have that prayer to be able to dismiss when it's not needed.
Yeah, I think that one of the things, you know, sometimes we talk about cutting room floor, try to work this out in real time here. One of the things that's difficult about it is specifically what you were just talking about. You know, we don't want to dismiss the person. Is like learning to set those boundaries, though.
Yeah.
To where it's like, I'm not going to dismiss this person. I'm not going to give up on this person. But at the same time, remember that I am under no undue obligation to allow toxic people in my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the balance that we have to try to be able to find in life. Of it's like, you know what, this person is a critic. This is what they do. This is all they have done with me, and so I don't have to give them avenues to continue to do that in my life.
Yeah, and we've used the phrase "flip the script" before, and so if you flip that script, you can actually view it as not that you're cutting someone out, but you're doing what's best for them to not give them an opportunity to do what's bad for them. Because being negative all the time unnecessarily is bad for you. And so if you're allowing them to be that way to you, in a sense, you're aiding them, enabling them to continue in a behavior that's unhealthy.
Yeah.
So,
what
it really stuck out to me, thinking about Nehemiah, and part of what this kind of comes through one of the prayers too, we'll get through later. God keep me focused, I think was that prayer.
Yeah.
But just how it wasn't just that Nehemiah was good at dismissing criticism. It's because he had something better to do. Like he had a mission. He had a purpose. He had a calling, something that, if I remember correctly, in the early part of the book, weighed so heavily on him, he was brought to tears.
Yes.
And so let's just catch everybody up the story of Nehemiah in kind of broad strokes, Adam, before the criticism happens. Just what's the book of Nehemiah all about?
The shortest man in the Bible.
Yeah, he was Nehemiah.
Or Nahum the shoe height.
Well, yeah.
Is shorter.
Oh, that's
shoe
good.
Height.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
So, Jewish people have been in captivity from Babylon for, you know, a while. And after 70 years, Persians defeat the Babylonians. And so the king of Persia says the Jewish people can go back, let them go home. And they start to rebuild the temple.
Mm-hmm.
And they get the temple done, but... They get the foundation of the temple done, and then they just kind of get discouraged and give up, and, they finally get the temple done. That's what it is. It took them 20 years to get the temple done. Right. Kind of like, it's going to take me 20 years to get through this story.
Yeah.
But that's what they did. So the only thing they'd rebuilt in the city was the temple. And so Nehemiah, who's the cupbearer to the king, finds out that that's all that's been done. There are no walls.
The
so that means
Persia, the king of Persia. Yeah.
Yes. And what did I say?
You said to the king.
Okay.
I just wanted to make sure. Yeah. King of Persia. This is still captivity.
Good. Yeah. Sometimes I forget to say things. And, but he finds out that the wall's not there. It just kills him. And because he knows that means his city, his people, they're not protected. So he goes to the king, says, I want to go back and rebuild the wall. And, the king, blesses him, actually says, you know, yes. And then Nehemiah's like, well, and will you pay for it? He's like, yes. And then he's like, and can I have security? And he's like, you know, yes. And so that's what he goes on. But it's a compelling thing. It's his big problem.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just like, I've got to do something about it. And so that's what's driving him.
It's his, this just jumped into my head again, his BHAG.
Yes.
Remember that one, the big, hairy, audacious goal.
Yes.
BHAG.
Yep.
Have you ever heard of that, Luke?
No.
You haven't?
That's amazing.
There you go.
You need to read it.
Everyone has a BHAG. Everyone needs a BHAG.
Yeah, you need to read Jim Collins' Good to Great. That's where that's from.
Good
yeah.
to Great.
Mm-hmm. Good to All Great. Right.
Cool.
It's a really a fascinating story, and some of my friends, this is like one of their favorite books of the whole Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a story a lot of people don't necessarily know. It's easy to overlook. And even in the sermon, Adam, you mentioned how Nehemiah wasn't this, you know, powerful prophet or something. Yeah. I mean, I guess he's still in the scriptures as like a minor prophet.
No, I think it's a book of history, isn't it?
It's a book of historical narrative.
So, I mean, but yeah, he's just this guy who has a vision.
Yeah, he's a guy who is the cupbearer to the king. That means he tests the food and the drink to make sure it wasn't poisoned.
Poisoned, yeah.
So he's like a Secret Service agent in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
So he's part of that. That's kind of what he's doing.
But yeah, he gets this mission, and I found it interesting. His quote-unquote enemy, like the king of Persia,
mm-hmm.
was all in favor of him going back, but then he gets there, and there's members of the land that are still there.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the critics. So
those dirty Samaritans, man.
I know. That's where, honestly, some of the hatred came from when you get to the New Testament times with Jesus and the disciples and why it was such a big deal for Jesus to go through Samaria because of this type of behavior. So they're overly critical, saying things like, your wall is so weak.
It's like, how weak is it?
It's like your mama jokes, you know. Or how weak it? If a fox jumped on that, that'd fall down. You know, it's kind of humorous.
Your mama's so stupid.
Your wall is so weak. Okay, but they say stuff like that. So it just brought me to a question: why do you think it is so easy for us to fall into criticism, like just the bad type of criticism? Why do you think it's so easy for us to get there?
I think a couple of thoughts here. One of the thoughts is I think it's easy because we're insecure people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know, this may be my personality coming through, but I know that sometimes whenever I'm critical, that it's because like I feel bad about what I'm not doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever I see somebody, you know, doing something that like almost makes me feel guilty, and it's kind of like, well, you know, the only reason they're doing that's because of this. So I think that's part of it. But I think, Luke, I'll let you talk for a second because I'm going to look up something that one of our friends sent us about this counselor type guy. And he actually gave me just a few thoughts on why this happened. So you get to fill the space while I look.
Yeah, I mean, insecurity was the first word that came to mind. And I've already talked about that a little bit. But yeah, whenever we aren't secure in who or whose we are, sometimes we'll want to put other people down to elevate ourselves up above them. Of course, it doesn't really work that way, but we've convinced ourselves that it does.
Yep.
And so I'm going to feel a lot better about my circumstances, or I'm going to feel a lot better about my talents and abilities, or I'm going to feel a lot better about the type of person or the type of character I have if I know or I've convinced myself that I'm doing better than someone else. And so in order to convince myself that I'm doing better than someone else, I'll just critique them a little bit and say, well, this is where you're a little bit off, or this is where you could be doing better. And, oh, hey, look at me, like, cause I've got it figured out. Right.
Yeah.
You know, like, so I know how to build a wall that could last or something like
if
that.
If I was doing that, no fox would knock that over.
Right. And then I think too, just sometimes we critique because, I mean, this is probably the one that comes straight from Nehemiah. I think the criticism that came to Nehemiah and to the people rebuilding the wall was because what they were doing was something the other people didn't want accomplished. Right. So whenever you go out, whenever someone goes out and tries to accomplish something that you're not for, it's really easy to go ahead and criticize them. And because you just don't agree. Right. So, and you see that all the time in our culture and context,
the news,
and politics,
yeah.
and news. And it's like, because they're trying to accomplish something that I don't agree with or that I don't want, I'm going to critique, and tear them down so that they can't accomplish it. And so that's kind of where it comes from.
And sometimes it jumps into not only are we going to critique what they're doing, but we're just going to critique their character because if they're doing that, they must be this type of person.
Right.
And it's so dangerous. I mean, for me, I think I'm easily critical when jumping to last week when I feel out of control.
Okay.
So if I... For example, I'll just use a parenting illustration. Parenting, that's a season of life. And so if I feel like I don't have control over my kids, it is way too easy to be critical of their behavior and what they're not doing or what they are doing, when it has nothing to do with them, they're, you know, and more to do with I feel out of control.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to criticize because, well, you should have done that better. You know, does that make sense?
Yep.
So, yeah, Adam, what was shared?
Yeah. So a few thoughts here. So our friend Tim, this is what he said. He said, one thing is, and this is a common denominator with all difficult people, is that their fears are greater than their identity. Mm-hmm. And so rather than assuming their God-given roles, they're consumed with other people's roles, and they're, you know, either they want to use other people for their own ends, or they just want to tear down what other people are doing. He also said, too, that, you know, it's because there's a closed mindset. They're scarcity thinkers, not abundance thinkers. Mm-hmm. And then the critical person believes, and Luke, this you actually said almost exactly what he said. It's easier to pull people down than it is to go through the hard work of raising themselves up.
Right.
And so it's just and I think that just goes down to the lack of confidence, the lack of assurance that they have. Because, like, I think, as we've been sitting here just talking about it, one of the things that just occurred to me is, like, I think a lot of times criticism comes and we become critical of other people because of our spiritual amnesia. And so we've put ourselves into this place where it's like, well, I don't need grace. I don't need forgiveness. I don't need these kind of things. And so I see their behavior and I'm just going to criticize what they're doing, criticize, because obviously I've got it all figured out, which is a little bit in the hypocrite as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the word critical is there, hypocritical.
Yeah, right. No, I think one of the things I shot back to you yesterday, Adam, was one of the verses that comes to mind with just this whole series. Is when Jesus, I think it's Sermon on the Mount, says, hey, before you grab that speck of dust in someone else's eye, you should probably take care of the massive log that's in your own eye.
Yeah.
And it just feels like that's a little bit of what's going to be in each of these sermons here for the series. It's like, okay, we want to definitely figure out how to deal with the critic and love them well, because they do exist.
Yep.
And they're a part of our lives, something we can't avoid. But also at the same time, we want to make sure that we are overcoming the critic in ourselves too.
Yes.
Because it's just important.
Oh, well, that's a great transition to the next question here is just how can we then become positive critics? And maybe a story jumps into your mind of someone who has done this very well for you. They've guided you with positive, constructive criticism, correction, but in a way that you knew it was helpful and from love. And maybe does a story jump to your mind? Does a person jump to your mind? Does a situation or how they did it, their tone of voice, anything jump to your mind just along those questions?
I mean, for me, absolutely. And I shared one of the stories in the message, but like I remember whenever I first started preaching, you know, I've got this thing where I think I'm funnier than I am sometimes. And
yeah, I think the other two of us would agree with that.
Yeah, exactly. And so
that we shared that struggle.
Yeah.
Or that you think you're funny.
Either way, it works.
Yeah, we agree with both.
Yeah, both those things are true. I remember there were a couple of things that I would say, you know, in a message, just trying to be funny, just trying to engage with people. And I think mostly because of my I want to say a lot of it came from my youth and inexperience, and just sometimes you try to get a rise out of people because it's like, well, some reaction's better than no reaction. Mm-hmm. And so I had a couple of guys who were, you know, either elders at the time or former elders that they would just kind of just pull me aside and they'd just say, hey, you know, whenever you said that, I know you thought it was funny, but you need to know that for some of our people, here's what they heard and this is how it makes them feel. So, you know, you might want to think about that. And and honestly, in the moment, because of my youthful arrogance and stuff, well, it's just, you know, dumb and people should just get over it and, you know, not take themselves so seriously.
Yeah.
And maybe there's a little bit to that and all that stuff, but the reality was, that I needed to think a little bit more clearly about, you know, some of the phrases and the words that I was using, if anything, because people didn't know me at that point. I mean, it's, it's one thing after, you know, preaching every week for 14 years,
right?
You
know,
to say something, but whenever it's like sermon number 7, you know, it's like, they don't know me. They don't know my heart, you know.
That was probably the best sermon you ever preached.
Probably was.
Your 7th sermon.
Oh, my gosh. You have no idea how great that was.
It's been said something before about, like, you're going to offend people with the gospel just because die to yourself. That message we can't compromise on.
Yeah.
And so don't offend them before that.
Yeah.
On purpose, at least.
Yeah.
And some of it, like you said, is unavoidable, but people are going to hear what they hear. But as far as it depends on us, we just did this morning in CLC, Romans 12. As far as it depends on you, live at peace with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So. I think back to a story. I was, I think, 17, and I was...
This was 4 years ago.
This was 10 years ago, actually. Wow, that feels weird to say out loud. So I was kind of doing my first... it was kind of like my first experience working with a church. During the summer, my youth minister, the senior minister, Richard, and then Ronnie, had kind of asked me to work as a kind of an intern for the children's ministry area, and I was super excited about it. And I remember two things. It was during the week of VBS, and one of the things that they had asked me to do was to clean the, you know, sanctuary auditorium where all of the VBS shenanigans were happening. And I think there was glitter the night before. And so it was like the worst thing that could have ever happened. And so I, like, you know, like, just being a high school teenage boy, I just kind of did like a spot vacuum, right? Like, where I saw some glitter or where I saw some things that needed to get done, I went and I did it. And then I went back and they came up and they started walking around the auditorium. And then they were like, this isn't really all that clean. So they sat me down and they started talking through, they took that opportunity to call me to something higher and better. And I didn't obviously receive it very well. Right. So, like, I was just like kind of nodding and agreeing and apologizing. And on the inside, I'm thinking, you guys are the worst and you're dumb. And, I'm so mad. And so they left and they were like, could you do a better job here in the, with vacuuming and cleaning up? I'm like, fine. And so I just pouted the entire time that I was cleaning up this, you know, sanctuary, all that sort of stuff. But like, that's, again, it's insecurity. Like, they came in love. They took the opportunity to call me to something higher, and I didn't receive it too well because I was too immature at the time. So Ronnie and Richard, if you ever find this podcast and you're listening, sorry for the way that I thought about you in those, you know, hour and a half that I was vacuuming, but I'm grateful because what they did in that moment was they called to something higher. And so I think, like, whenever you're trying to do constructive criticism for somebody, you need to make sure that there's always a call to something higher and better. You need to make sure that you are explaining the why to them, you know? And so, you know, like, I even remember they were talking about, like, one of the things that's really important is that we're going to have lots of family visit, like, first time families visiting on VBS days. And so, like, we want to make sure that this place is really clean so that they feel comfortable. And, and it's like, okay, I get it now. So I don't know. That was the story that popped into my mind. Always call to something higher and explain the why.
The vocabulary that I've been given over the last few years is, you know, you don't want to call people out. You want to call them up.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's what we're trying to do. It's just that's positive constructive criticism. It's calling them up and saying there's something better here. Mm-hmm. There's something better.
Yep.
Yeah. I love that. To be the positive critic, and avoid the negativity. So back to Nehemiah, besides his prayer life, because we'll get into that here in just a little bit with application, was there anything else just about his person or his character that strikes you as something we can take away from his example of how to avoid criticism? What jumps into your head?
I just love his steadfastness and just the stick to the goal and just get it done. I just love that.
Yeah, Nehemiah is a character or a story in the Bible that gets used a lot in leadership terminology, right? Like, you could probably find 10 books on Amazon about biblical leadership, and they use Nehemiah as the example.
Yeah.
Because he really does. I mean, he comes and he leads a group of people to accomplish something really incredible, despite facing a ton of trials and tribulations along the way. because he had the goal in mind. So I think that's just really cool about Nehemiah.
Great leader.
Yeah, he was a really, really good leader.
Yeah.
Cool. And he had a friend named Ezra.
Yeah, who built the temple.
Yeah. And then they read the law.
That's probably the coolest part of that story.
Yeah, and then the people are weeping as well. And at one point, I think Ezra and Nehemiah might have been one book. Possibly. Maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be.
It could have been. I'm not saying it was, but yeah. It doesn't really matter.
In fact, what we're going to do for church next Sunday is we're going to have everybody come, and we're going to move the chairs out of the auditorium, and you're going to stand up, and we're going to read the law. And
you're going to read the entire book of Nehemiah.
So moved.
Until you cry.
Yeah. It was just Nehemiah chapter 13 is done, and you guys aren't crying yet? Okay, well, let's go back to chapter 1.
We'll go back to Ezra.
Yeah, back to Ezra. There we go.
Go to Numbers.
The application this week was really just five prayers, which is super cool. So let's just work through those kind of, I guess, one at a time, but also as a whole, kind of do a both and here. Because the big application point was just pray through the criticism.
Mm-hmm.
So you read Nehemiah, you see prayers a lot, anywhere from 11 to 14, like we already said. One question would just be, why is it so important to pray through the criticism? Why do you guys think prayer in the midst of it is so important?
Well, I think that it's, the way we've said it in the message is we want to talk to God before we talk to the critic, because there's too much that we try to do in our own strength and our own power.
Yeah.
And so it's, God, I need your help. I need your intervention. I need your wisdom. One of the daily prayers I pray is just for wisdom and discernment. Help me to know what to say, when to say it, how to say it, if to say it. Because it is okay to have an unexpressed thought. That's like a grand revelation. It's like, just because you think it doesn't mean you have to say it.
You're hitting me.
Yeah. How does it go? Everything you say must be true, but everything that's true does not have to be said.
Yeah, it's like my buddy says, he's like, man, I always get credit for the things I say, but nobody gives me credit for the things I don't say.
Yeah.
And so.
That's good.
it is okay to do that, and it is a blessing to have unexpressed thoughts. And so. But that's why we're going to talk to God before we talk to the critic. And whenever we're going through that process and God gives us the wisdom and discernment, then we're able to kind of just start going. It's like, so how should I respond? And really the question might even be, should I even respond?
Should I at all?
It's not even necessarily a how, but it's like, should I just listen to this? Should I not? Do they have, I love that the phrase a friend gave me, do they have a point or do they have an agenda?
Uh-huh.
Because if it's somebody who just has an agenda who is like, God loves you and I have a great plan for your life. It's like, hey, I don't necessarily need somebody who's got an agenda. They're trying to work something through me, which is a little bit of the manipulation thing.
Mm-hmm.
But do they actually have a point or do they have an agenda they're trying to push with me? And so Nehemiah ignored it.
Mm-hmm.
Just flat out ignored the criticism. He's like, yeah, I ain't got time for this.
I think another reason that I think prayer in the midst of receiving criticism is so important is it because it redirects your attention to someone else.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So like when you receive criticism, whether constructive or negative, it's really easy just to focus on that person who
said
that negative thing or myself who is insecure and feeling a certain way about the thing that they said. But whenever you go in prayer before the throne of God, what that does is it just allows you to center your mind and your thought and your attention on his character and his holiness and his grace and his presence mm-hmm. and his power and his mercy. And so when you do that, I mean, is it really the end of the world that you got criticized?
Right.
You'll walk away feeling a lot more confident. And yeah, I think just prayer helps you kind of focus on someone else.
Yeah. I know for me, one of the, I guess, challenges in prayer, but then specific prayers to pray is just to, God, help me to see this person as you see them.
Yep.
And so if you pray that prayer for yourself, for God's help, I think that can certainly help your attitude towards the critic and also just see God's heart for them, for you, all of that. So let's get to these prayers. There's five of them that were shared. God, help me. I'm being criticized. How should I respond?
Mm-hmm.
God, help me to know when to dismiss invalid criticism. God, help me to become less sensitive to criticism. God, keep me focused. And then finally, God, make me bolder. So Going through all those, we can reference them, I guess, as we tell a story or something that pops into our mind. But just as you think through those prayers, what stories, some were shared in the sermon, either biblically or in your personal life, come to mind when you might need to pray those prayers? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, I think that, you know, really, anytime we're criticized, all five of these prayers are things that we need to go through. So it's not like, oh, I got this kind of criticism, so I'm going to pray prayer two.
Good.
It's just, these are the prayers to just kind of work through. It's like, okay, God, do I need to respond to this? Because not everything merits a response. Some people are just being critical. Mm-hmm. They're not being sincere. They're not trying to help you accomplish the project. They're not, you know, it's not the first time they've brought it up. You know, it's just they're rehashing old arguments that you've had, you know, in the past. It's not reasonable. You know, all these kind of things. And then, too, if I answer, am I actually helping or am I just defending myself? Because that's part of, you know, what we like to do.
Sure.
And so I think that, like, all these things. So should I respond? God, help me know. Is this something I should just dismiss? You know, do I just need to push this off to the side and not deal with?
To ignore it like Nehemiah did.
Just ignore it like Nehemiah did. You know, this doesn't matter. This isn't something that it merits any of our time. And then help me become less sensitive to this because I am a people pleaser. I am somebody who values other people's opinions of me way too much. And so that's why I'm sensitive to criticism. And that's I've forgotten my identity in that moment. And so, God, you got to help me do that. And God, you've called me to an incredible task. Every day, one of the things I can say that I'm grateful for is that God has called me to something special. Mm-hmm. I have a special task, a special call in my life, and I can be grateful for that. And whenever I'm, you know, dealing with guys who want to make fun of the wall that we're building, then I'm distracted. So God, keep me to do that. And then keep me bold, because sometimes we get criticism because we say things that are true. We are people who stand for truth and we extend grace. And so there are going to be times whenever we have to say things that are, what Josh said earlier, just offensive. Mm-hmm. And they're countercultural.
Yeah.
You know, say crazy things like, yeah, we believe that there are like two genders. I mean,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Crazy, whoa. Revolutionary
Hold
things.
Hold on.
I know.
Wow.
But, you know, that you know, sex is made for marriage between a married man and a married woman. That's where it is, and that's where it's supposed to stay. Mm-hmm. And we're going to say things like that, and... we're going to say things like you shouldn't gossip. We're going to say all kinds of things.
100%.
And so it can be really easy to say, well, whenever I say things like that, I get criticism. So I'm just going to back away from those. Let me just get up there, tell a few jokes, make people feel good. And maybe we can get some tears, some good tears, just moving tears. But, you know, saying the hard things we're going to just kind of shy away from. And so, God, you got to help me with all these things. And so like, that's what I'm saying. With criticism, it's like, it's not like you got criticism A over here, and so pray prayer four.
That's good. That's a good note. Luke, what situations maybe come to your mind? Adam, I love that you gave those specifics of, as a communicator of the gospel, those are some specific things we're going to have to say,
because
mm-hmm. It's what the Bible says, and we believe at God's heart. He's not just being mean or giving us a rule just to give us a rule, but because he really does have our best in mind. And so we're going to say it. We're going to say it unapologetically. But Luke, what for you, like what other situations maybe in your life pop into your head when you might face some criticism that you're going to have to pray these five prayers?
I'm thinking about, I'll get there. my mind is stuck right now on just the phrase Adam used on prayer number two. Just let me just say it again. If 12 or 15 people tell you the same thing, that's probably going to be the constructive criticism. You know, there, if that many people say it, you're probably needing to listen to them. But also I would say too, like proximity of relationship,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
right? Like, so if the two of you had something, to say to me, mm-hmm. like, I'm going to probably receive and respond that a whole lot better than someone who isn't necessarily in a further circle
right.
or proximity of my relationship. Or if my wife
mm-hmm.
Said something critical in love to call me to something higher, then I know, I'll probably need to pay attention to that one. Whereas, like, if, you know, some person says the same thing, it's like, well, you don't know me as well as right. my wife knows me. And so I don't really understand why that's coming from you. And so probably mm-hmm. can dismiss all of that. And so I just think like, I'm struggling to get to like specific situations, but I think that that's kind of at play here as well, is like, who is this like criticism coming from? Is it coming from a mass amount of people? Is it coming from,
somebody
at your table in yeah. your circle, or is it just coming from someone who doesn't really know you well? Is it coming from someone who's, only like one person who's saying that thing, or one group of people who's saying that thing? I think that kind of matters.
Yeah, I think
in the way that we handle and approach it.
I think in like, you know, day to day stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think of, you know, like a dad out there, and so you're struggling with the, hey, I want our kids to go to church. I also want them to be able to play baseball. I want them to be able to do soccer.
Yep.
And so, but you're like, you know what? I think the faith thing needs to trump the sport thing. And so you tell the other members of the team, or you tell the coach, it's like, hey, yep. we're really into this church thing. We want our kids there. And so that means, and I'm just saying, maybe this sounds weird, but it's like, we're going to make sure we're at church, you know, two of the four Sundays of the month while we're in the league.
Uh-huh.
We're not just going to go once, and we're not just going to go whenever we don't have games. So there may be times whenever, you know, Billy's got to miss practice or Billy's got to miss this because we want him involved in church. Yeah. And, you will probably almost guaranteed be criticized for that.
Oh, absolutely.
100%.
Yeah. Well, it's prayer for, keep me focused.
Keep me focused.
Because when you make your priorities,
mm-hmm.
what really is the priority, you know?
Right. And so, but you ask that you pray all those things too. It's like, God, is this something I need to listen to? Is this something I need to dismiss? You know, help me not to be sensitive to this because this hurts. Cause it feels like, you know, they're going to take it out on my kid, you know, make me bolder here, you know? And so I think of something like that, or, like I think about this, you know, my kids are out of school. But like in today's age, and it's not even that far that my kids are out of school, but like, the decision between public school, private school, and homeschool.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, you gave that in the message, yeah. And I thought that was really worthwhile to bring out because it's too easy for people to be critical.
Yeah, and I see pros and I see cons to every single one of those. Yeah,
all of it.
But it's like, man, if this is where you feel like the Lord is like leading you and directing you and saying, hey, no, I think you need to have your kids in public school,
mm-hmm.
Because here's why. And it's like, okay. You know, you're probably going to get criticized. So God, help us to be bold in this. Help us to be this, you know, but it may be the private school, maybe the homeschool thing. And so, I think there's just a lot of criticism just comes around so easily, the way we use our money, all the things, you know?
Yeah. I like those practical, examples for sure. It just popped into my head. Maybe you do make a list of just family values.
Mm-hmm.
If it's a family, or if you're an individual or just a couple, make a list of values. And so that way it takes a little bit of the question out mm-hmm. when a decision has to be made. It's not like you're saying no to this person. It's like, well, we've made a list of values
right.
that's important to us. And this is what our family, this is what our marriage, this is what I'm going to be about.
Mm-hmm.
So you run it through that filter and then you just unapologetically say like, I've committed. It's not that I'm saying no to you. It's I've committed to be this for my wife, my family. So yeah, I like that. Last night we, had a class, and one of the lines that was said was, pray like it all depends on God, which I think Nehemiah did, but then work like it all depends on you. Really, really good. So I say that to say, are there any other just practical action steps that you can do alongside of the prayers all the time, remembering it actually does depend on God, but just how can we work alongside God?
Yeah, I think you know, like one of the ones I mentioned in the message, I'm trying to remember which prayer it came underneath. I think it was in the Keep Me Focused, was like something practical you can do is like, if you can't get a critic off your mind, is you can write them a letter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that.
Just write it and don't hold back.
Don't send it.
Yes, but don't you dare send it.
Yeah.
But write that letter and get it all out.
Yeah.
And
you should see the amount of Facebook drafts I have.
Exactly. The number of tweets that I have, you know, I don't save them, but the number of tweets that I have typed up, and it's just like, okay, yeah, that ain't going out. But you know, doing something of that, you know, of that nature of just like, okay, I've got to do this because I'm so distracted by this. Because that's the thing, at least for me, like I know whenever I'm experiencing criticism or dealing with critical people, that it just becomes like I'm having conversations with that person in my head.
Oh yeah, me too.
24/7, man. Mm-hmm. Like I'm waking up at 2 a.m. It's like, and another thing, you know? And furthermore, and so it's like just writing up that manifesto if it needs to be, just getting it all out on the page and then just letting it sit. Most of the time, you probably won't even have to send that letter because you will have handed that over to the Lord. And so I think that's a good exercise for us to do.
Cool. Anything else practical?
Yeah. I mean, you could do that and then throw it in the God box like we did, we talked about.
Yeah, the God box.
You are handing that criticism over to the Lord. And so you don't really need to pay attention to it anymore.
Yeah, that's good.
I keep coming back to just like, and I keep coming back to it because I know that this is the struggle that I face is, it's confidence versus insecurity.
Yeah.
Are you confident in who Jesus says that you are, mm-hmm. or are you not?
Mm-hmm.
And so, man, like lean into your identity in Christ and understand that your value comes from what he says about you. And just as a child of God, do what a child of God is supposed to do. If you want to fall into the will of God, then rejoice always, pray continually, and give thanks in all circumstances. And if you're doing those things, man, you don't got to worry about, you know, the negative criticism.
Sandballots.
Right.
Right.
Like you don't have to because you know, okay, here's what's true about me. I'm a child of God, dearly loved by him. I am who he says I am. He has saved me. He is sanctifying me. He will glorify me. You know, like I'm going to do my best to align myself with his will every day. And when you do that conversation with God and you believe that about your life, I think that some of the problems with criticism that you're facing because of your own insecurity will start to be overcome on a daily basis.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I'd throw this in, define your wall. You got to find.
Sure. Yeah.
You got to find your wall.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to find your purpose and
your BHAG.
Your BHAG. You got to find those things.
I love that.
Yeah. You got to find those things. Know who you are. Know your purpose, and then your focus is able to stay where it needs to be.
Yeah, and so it gets us to the bottom line. You said criticism never changes the world, specifically just the negative, not the constructive. That's why we have a book of the Bible named Nehemiah and not Sanballat.
It's exactly right.
You know, there's a book named after the one who did change his world. And so the challenge, I like this, God help me to overcome my critical nature. And in a sense, that looks kind of inward focused.
Mm-hmm.
But I think as we focus inwardly, it also helps us to focus outwardly on the world as we deal with our own critical nature.
Mm-hmm.
It helps us to find the good in other people too. Like if we just commit to finding the good in our children, our spouse, our coworkers, it's going to really have a ripple effect. So anything else to add to that challenge? What practical things do you think?
I think once again, like we're just coming back to this idea that this whole series, like, you know, if we want to call it how to deal with difficult people or whatever, we're not actually like teaching or training. Here's how you go about fixing them, or here's how you go about controlling them. Because what does that make us?
Yeah.
The very people that we don't want to be.
Right.
What we're talking about here so far is, yes, you will experience critical people. Yes, you will experience hypocritical people. Yes, you'll experience manipulative people, all that sort of stuff. So you know that the only thing that you can control is yourself and your response. So if we're going to deal with difficult people, we need to deal with ourselves and how we see ourselves, how we're responding ourselves, how we're believing ourselves. And then, you know, we'll be able to be in position to love those people well.
Yeah.
But it's that same thing. Get the log out of your own eye before the speck in the other person's eye. You got to look inwardly to deal with this.
Adam, anything else to add from sermon number one of difficult people?
I just say love people up rather than tear them down.
That's a good word to end on. The sermon conversation. So glad you joined us for that. And hopefully you were with us either online or in person yesterday, enjoying the barbecue as well. And hey, I'll be gone a few weeks. Next week I'll be in Colorado, and then a couple weeks after that I'll be in Israel. And so looking forward to those trips, but I'll see you guys on the podcast, I guess, in May.
Well, you're going to listen. So,
yeah, I'll still listen.
Oh, he's going to be just...
We're gonna get like a bleep on the map in Israel.
Yeah.
You know, of someone who's tuned in.
Yeah, so I'll be gone for a few weeks, but I wanted to have some fun before took a break here for a little bit and just play the old tried and true Would You Rather game. And we're going to start asking you some questions. Would you rather, the beginning questions are going to be about difficult people.
Yes.
So would you rather experience a conversation with a close talker or a loud talker?
Ooh.
A loud talker.
How close is close?
Close is like an inch away from your nose.
Yeah, they have the reputation of being a close talker, so it's got to be pretty close.
Or they're so close, they're stepping on your toes.
Yeah, it'd have to be loud.
Okay. Would you rather have someone shake your hand way too hard or way too limp?
Oh, too hard.
Hard. Yeah, yeah, too hard.
Would you rather have someone finish every single one of your sentences or never
listen?
Yeah, that's right. Or would you rather have someone never listen so you have to repeat every one of your sentences?
Oh, gosh.
Unfortunately, my wife has to deal with that second one every day.
What did you say?
She said something about not paying attention. I don't know.
I wasn't listening. I think I would rather deal with an over-talker, talking over person.
Finishing your...
Yes,
sentences.
Something to finish my sentence.
Yeah, because okay. I'll just give him the benefit of the doubt and be like, yeah, that's probably what I was going to say.
You know what?
Or just change it.
Yeah,
that's what I've done before. So people that like finish sentences, I try to finish the sentence not like they're expecting.
Yeah,
I'll do that with Dominic. We'll actually play a game with it, and he'll see if he can finish my sentences. I always change it.
When people ask me, "Hey, Luke, guess what?" I usually try to come up with some dumb, smart comment and be like, "And it's a guess." It's like, the elephants are no longer existent, the fifth dentist caved and now they're all recommending Trident or something like that.
So what's funny is like, I remember early on, and I can't remember if we were dating or if we were married, but Jennifer was like, man, I'm having deja vu right now. And I just reached over and just flicked her really hard in the arm. I was like, yeah, did you see that coming?
I bet she loved that.
Yeah. She does that to me now.
Would you rather have someone who constantly borrows your belongings without asking, or someone who never returns anything even though they asked?
First one,
yeah, absolutely. Okay. As long as it's going to come back.
We could keep asking all sorts of difficult people questions. Let's just do a few more would you rathers. Would you rather have to wear clown shoes or wear a clown nose all the time?
Shoes.
My feet are so big already.
Shoes all the time.
Let's do all shoes. Right.
Would you rather always speak in rhymes or speak in a heavy accent you can't shake it off?
Depends on what's the accent. Is it something cool?
I don't know. You pick the accent, I guess.
I pick the
for
accent.
Each other.
For each other?
Okay. Yeah, what accent would you give me?
Australian.
Shoot. Give me that one every day.
All right.
You can't shake it.
So what's Luke's accent?
Swahili.
I don't even know.
Yeah, I don't even know what it sounds like either.
I think, what was the first one?
Speak in rhymes all the time.
Speak in rhymes.
I think I'd
cool.
do that. That'd be fun.
It kind of would be fun.
Yeah. Do you?
And especially
you want a peanut?
Yeah, for preaching. I mean,
for preaching, it would be just like
amazing. Yeah, you'd be better at preaching and better at teaching,
and better at reaching,
and better at reaching the leeching of
and follow Jesus the together
and leeching. No, and we're not going to go there. Okay. would you rather have a permanent unibrow or a permanent handlebar mustache?
Handlebar mustache. Right. Ask our wives that question.
Handlebar mustache.
Well, sure, yeah. Would you rather have a third arm or a third leg?
Ooh. Where is the location of these things?
Let's be careful here.
I think
it'd have to be the leg. I'm just trying to think of how it would affect my golf swing.
And I literally started thinking about disc golf right away. Yeah. Like, would it benefit me more with another leg or another hand?
Yeah, I think the leg would help more, be more balanced,
more power out of the base.
Yeah.
I'll go with leg.
Deep thoughts.
Yeah, go with leg.
All right. Last question. Would you rather have the ability to fly, but only for 10 seconds at a time? Or would you rather be able to teleport, but only to places you've already been?
Teleport to places I've already been. I think that would be great with, you know, for us, this family not in Georgia.
Yeah.
You know?
And
I could teleport.
So I think the way around it is you just buy a plane ticket to like one time to wherever you want to go a lot.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. And then you just enjoy
it. You just get to teleport the rest of your life.
100%.
So that's how you game the system.
Cool. All right. Well, we learned a lot about Adam and Luke. We learned a lot about how to deal with difficult people. Next week is going to be the manipulator.
It would be manipulator or the overly needy. I can't remember which one it is off the top of my head.
Okay. Well, come back. It's going to be a great time as we continue this discussion. Man, I've had a fun time today. Hope you have too. Hope it's been challenging, helpful, all the stuff. And thanks for listening. And keep on listening, sharing it, all the stuff.
Yeah, critique our podcast.
Yeah, go out there and be difficult.
Five stars. 10 out of 10.
Yeah, go out there and be difficult.
That's right. All right. Well, that's enough, I think, for today. Thanks, as always. We love you, and we like you lots, and we hope to see you next week. Until then, have a good one.